Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello and welcome to Is It Normal? The Pregnancy Podcast with me, Jessie Ware. This is a bonus episode all around breastfeeding. Some of you will find it very easy, some of you will not. Some of you will have cracked nipples, some of you will be able to feed your baby all the time and there'll be no problems. All of you will have a different experience with breastfeeding. And so we have a lactation consultant here, Catherine Stagg, to help us go through the beautiful art of breastfeeding. So breastfeeding, we're all told to do it. Why is breast best? And does everyone still use that term still? But yes, breast is best. That's what we hear from midwives before the baby's out. Let's talk about it. What is the beautiful, magical quality of breastfeeding?
Most people in the breastfeeding support world really hate the term breast is best. First of all, it's just straight away putting it up on this pedestal of, you know, you're the perfect mother if you manage to do it. And in reality, it's quite hard work and it's quite difficult. And often the support that's available, especially here in the UK, is a little bit, you know, sketchy. And you have to really, really hunt for some good breastfeeding support. And so if you're telling people all the time that they have to breastfeed and then they don't back that up afterwards with the support available for you in order to be able to do it, all we end up is with people, you know, feeling like failures. And it's a complete nightmare, really, to be honest. So what I like is that breastfeeding is normal. Breastfeeding is natural. Breastfeeding is hard. But it is the way, you know, we are mammals, we have breasts, we have their mammary glands, that's what they are. We are supposed to feed our babies as mammals, that's, you know, how we're designed to do it. And so really anything else away from that is not the norm. And so we can do other things to kind of help, you know, so people may be expressing, people may be supplementing with formula if they have to for whatever reason. And that's fine, but you know, the sort of what we're supposed to do basically as mammals is feed our babies ourselves, and that just gives you, you know, the sort of optimum potential for your baby. Does that sound right? I don't know, health potentials and learning potentials, things like that. So, you know, that's the kind of thing. And also, I'm sure anyone who's breastfed knows it's far more than just the nutrition as well. It's a relationship at the end of the day. And so, you know, being able to give your baby what they need from an emotional support point of view, and comfort and security and all this stuff as well, that's all part of breastfeeding as well. So, you know, that's kind of really, really important to remember. So for some people who don't manage to have a full milk supply, these things are really, really important as well. You know, those kind of aspects of breastfeeding. A friend of mine who has something called IGT, which is basically a underlying cause of low milk supply, she focuses on the fact that she's providing 100% of the emotional support for her baby by breastfeeding. She's providing 100% of the immunological factors, because that's, you know, you only need a small amount of breast milk every day to do that. And she has to have a little bit of help with the nutrition. So she's, you know, she's doing 85% of it. And anyone who passes an exam with 85% is usually doing a fantastic job. That's what we usually say.
You know what? It's funny because I have a funny old relationship with breastfeeding. We're talking just post there being this Breastfeeding Awareness Week, which I felt like was everywhere this year. And for me, it was quite triggering because I, although I've breastfed my children, I have supplemented and predominantly formula fed because I didn't have a high enough milk supply. And I really wish I could have more of a beautiful relationship with breastfeeding, because I think it is so beautiful when it works. But for me, it was a funny old week. But I love how you've just kind of put that. I think it isn't going to be easy for everyone. And what are some of the problems that people may encounter at the beginning and can they be overcome? Give me some of the examples that will be, you know, that those initial days, weeks that when you're breastfeeding, you'll maybe feel like giving up.
Yeah. I mean, I think the first thing I always suggest when people are expecting their baby, first of all, is to do some research. So the problem with breastfeeding is it's marketed as being natural, which of course it is, but that doesn't mean it's easy. So think of it more like, you know, learning to ride a bike as opposed to learning to talk or whatever. You know what I mean? It's sort of natural from that point of view. Humans can ride bikes fine. You know what I mean? It's quite a natural thing. Yeah, we can walk fine, but we have to learn how to do it. So it's kind of more of a learning process. So doing a bit of education before you have your baby whilst your brain is still working. Really good plan. So signing up to a preparing to breastfeed session, that kind of thing, really, really helps. And, and if you can kind of learn, firstly, how milk production works, the fact that it is supply and demand. So the more often you remove the milk from your breast, the more you're going to make. So that's one of the underlying factors. And a lot of people don't understand kind of how that works. They think that breasts need to fill up in order to work properly. And, you know, you have to wait a certain amount of time to feed the baby and all this sort of stuff. So trying to kind of get that across is really important. And then the other thing is learning about how to get a good latch as well. So watching videos, if you've got any friends breastfeeding, go and just study them. Can I just watch, you know, and just have a look at the baby latching on, go along to maybe a breastfeeding support group. And that sort of thing, just so a bit of preparation. And then learning about newborn baby behaviour is the other one, because babies don't feed every 3 hours. They feed a lot more than that. And that's a trap that a lot of people fall into, is that they think their baby should be fed every 3 hours. And some hospitals will tell you that, and healthcare professionals sometimes. When you have a sleepy baby in the early days, maybe over the first week or so, they can be quite sleepy, especially if they're a little bit early or if you've had lots of drugs in labour or such like. We say to wake the baby every 3 hours to make sure that they're getting at least 8 feeds a day, because that's the kind of minimum a baby should be fed.
Yes.
But in reality, once the baby starts to wake up a bit and kind of come round and sort of turn into a sort of proper newborn, so to speak, they do often like to feed a lot more than that. The average baby feeds around 11 times in 24 hours, and there's quite a wide range. And there are some babies who will feed less as well, and they do exist. We call them unicorn babies, those ones. But most babies like to feed really frequently, and they like to be cuddled most of the time in between. So it's actually really intense. And I think the intensity is the thing that surprises most people, actually, more than anything. And certainly for me, it was. That was the thing. It wasn't that I was having breastfeeding issues particularly. I was quite lucky, even though I had twins first. They were actually latching on well and feeding quite well. But it was the whole intensity of having baby just needing you all the time. And I think that's something that is just not spoken about really enough to start with, you know. So that's the kind of main things that you can sort of learn about before baby arrives. When they arrive earthside, lots of skin-to-skin to start with. Some babies don't latch straight away. So yes, ideally we'd like them to get a good feed in the first hour or so after birth. That's, you know, when that works, it usually means that things get a little bit easier afterwards. But if it doesn't happen, that does not mean that you're going to have to bottle feed. Sometimes babies just take a little bit of time to kind of learn how to do it and to wake up a bit, recover from the birth, such like. So in that scenario, if the baby's not latching particularly or not feeding well or is very sleepy and not really doing very much, you know, sometimes they go on and have a cup of sucks and fall asleep immediately, so they haven't really taken anything, then hand expressing again sort of every sort of 2 to 3 hours or so, getting some colostrum. You can give a colostrum to the baby via syringe. Sometimes that wakes the baby up and then the baby will be a bit more able to feed. So that can work really, really well. And also hand expressing frequently like that will give your breasts the message that they're wanting to make full milk production. So a lot of removing the colostrum in the first couple of days gives the breast messages to kind of to make more milk in, you know, once your milk begins to come in. So yeah, in the first couple of days you make colostrum. It's very small quantities. It's absolutely packed full of immunological factors. It's also laxative. It's amazing stuff. It looks kind of little tiny bits, dark yellow, sticky, sort of honey-like consistency. It's amazing stuff, and it should be all your baby needs in the first couple of days. So kind of trying to get the baby feeding well to start with, and if they're not, then hand expressing and getting the colostrum into them that way. And also asking for help, and that's the other thing. So yeah. The sooner you ask for help, if something isn't working and you're not sure whether it's right or it doesn't feel right, or it's hurting to breastfeed, or you're finding that you're having to, you know, maybe you're struggling with milk production, things like that, trying to get help in early if you can manage it, as soon as you can, really kind of helps. Yeah, you know, the sooner you can get help, the easier it is to kind of sort out any problems, basically.
And what help are you referring to? Are you talking about speaking to your midwife or a health visitor or a lactation consultant? Like, when should somebody be calling you?
First point of call is always your midwife. So if you're in the first sort of 2 weeks after birth, your midwife is who looks after you. Midwives have sort of fairly basic level of breastfeeding training. They usually do a kind of 2-day course. The most important thing is that they should know when to refer on if it's out of their remit as a midwife. And so they should say, I think you should get some more, you know, in-depth breastfeeding support, basically. So a health visitor, again, similar amount of training. Health visitor takes over your care from about sort of 2 to 3 weeks onwards, once baby's sort of back to birth weight and things seem to be going well and you're healing from birth and such like. So health visitor then continues your care from sort of 2-3 weeks up to when the child starts school. So that's your kind of sort of stock healthcare professionals. So they have a similar amount of training as well to the midwife from a breastfeeding point of view. So a lot of our breastfeeding support in the UK at the moment is reliant on the volunteer sector. So volunteers, all the groups all around, you know, for years and years and years, and helping parents to feed and kind of get everything going. It's fantastic. Works brilliant. They do an amazing job. Peer supports have about 12-week course training. And they are sort of like an informed friend, is kind of how we do. So they know about positioning attachment, how to get baby latched, all the sort of common problems, newborn behaviour, all that sort of stuff. So they're a fantastic source. That has been very difficult during COVID, but things are starting to get better again and they are opening up and groups are starting up again. And some of them are doing outside groups, some of them are doing appointment based groups, and some of them are doing, you know, small, if they've got a large room, they're having a few people in together. So it's starting to get better again. The next level after that is breastfeeding counsellor. So a lot of breastfeeding counsellors will run, be the sort of main person running a group if you're doing face-to-face support. And they have around sort of 2 years training, something like that. So I was a breastfeeding counsellor with the Association of Breastfeeding Mothers. That's one of the main organisations. There's the NCT, there's Breastfeeding Network and La Leche League as well. So they're the four main breastfeeding charities in the UK. So yeah, they sort of often are the sort of main go-to person in a group setting with the peer supporters kind of helping out. We also cover the helplines. So we've got National Breastfeeding Helpline, the NCT has a helpline, and La Leche League has a helpline as well. So all, lots of breastfeeding counsellors cover those. And then the next level up is a lactation consultant.
And that's what you're going to pay for.
That's you usually. Yeah. There are some in the NHS. So if you find an NHS one, you're doing really well, but there are some. So yeah, lactation consultants, we've had to do 1,000 hours of clinical practice, which is basically breastfeeding support. And we have to either be a healthcare professional or do health sciences. And we also have to do a 90-hour training course as well. And then once you've done that, you're allowed to apply for the exam, and then you have to pass a horrible 4-hour exam. So most lactation consultants, the term is International Board Certified Lactation Consultant, so IBCLC. That is what you're looking for if you're looking for sort of top level breastfeeding support. So we can do all of the stuff that the others can do as well, but then we can also do more of the complicated issues, you know, anything that's sort of a little bit unusual, we get to see a lot of. But the main thing is, because we tend to be in private practice, we often come to your home, and so we can give you support in your environment using your sofa, your cushions, your, you know, all the sort of thing, which can be really nice. And it means you don't have to go out as well, which, you know, when you're a new mum, it's quite hard to get out of the house.
Well, and I think, you know, as a parent that's had babies over the last 5 years, I feel like the conversation around breastfeeding and how the support has really changed in the last 5 years. Like, I felt like it was far more prescriptive the first time I had a child 5 years ago. And it was this thing where it was instructions, and it was kind of like, this is the way, breast is best, this is how you're going to do it, and your baby isn't feeding enough, or your baby isn't, it's, this isn't good enough kind of thing. And it made you feel like a failure. Round two, it felt a bit more gentle. There was definitely like this sense of urgency from health professionals that they wanted you to breastfeed. However, if you were struggling, I mean, I was kept on with my midwife for 6 weeks because they knew how hard I'd found it the first time. So they wanted to monitor me, but it wasn't, I didn't feel like it was kind of under an, you know, watchful eye that was kind of judging me. There was definitely, they were trying to support. Now this third time, it feels like an even more of a kind of open conversation. And I do feel like for parents that are wanting to breastfeed, that way of how you communicate and you support them, it's so, I almost feel like when someone speaks to me about breastfeeding, they have to treat me like I'm a toddler. The way that I speak to my son at the moment, like, I want to feel empowered without feeling under pressure. And it's all these kind of things that people say, relax, you should really relax. And you're like, well, I've got two children and I've got to look after them too. So this idea of relaxing is really unrelaxing because I'm stressed out about feeding the baby. And so, and I can't relax enough. So it's all, it's kind of, it's completely confusing. And you're trying to go, right, I'm going to just relax and let the milk flow. And I'm going to, like, but actually you're just so stressed that they're not getting enough food or something like that. So I do think that things have moved on. But I mean, for somebody who feels like they are, because some people are going to want to contact a lactation consultant or their midwife or health visitor, and some are just going to want to pack it in. My experience of breastfeeding three children, or trying to breastfeed three children and not finding it easy, it has been different in each circumstance. Is that normal for a parent to experience breastfeeding differently with each child? They may find it really easy the first time and then a nightmare the second.
Yes, totally. Because each child is an individual, first of all. And yeah. Yes, your breasts do tend to work fairly similarly each time. But actually, each pregnancy, you lay down more of the milk-making tissue. So if you've had a supply issue with the first child, sometimes it's better second, third, fourth, etc. Basically, each time you have a pregnancy, you tend to make a little bit more milk. So that can make it a little bit easier. However, you know, each child is an individual. Each of the babies is going to have different things going on. So you have to get to know the different personality. They're their own person. They have their own quirks. They have their own, you know. So, for example, for me, I've got four. So I had twins first and then two single ones afterwards. Mm-hmm. I thought I was going to be like sailing with the single baby, the first one. He was all right, actually. Fed fairly well. Lovely baby. Enjoyed breastfeeding. Fantastic.
Also, probably felt like a walk in the park after having
twins. It
did,
slightly.
Right?
Although it's still hard. You forget it's still hard,
yes.
Right? And when my fourth baby, it was a total nightmare from day one until he was about three.
Oh, really? Did you persevere?
I did, yes. I was a breastfeeding counsellor. There was no way I was able to.
So what were the things that you encountered that were different and harder?
It wasn't necessarily the actual feeding side of things. That was okay. But his personality, he was what we call a high needs child. You know, literally for the first 6 months of his life, I don't think I ever put him down. I just couldn't put him down. He wouldn't go in a cot. You know, you lowered him in, he'd scream straight away. So had to safely bed share the whole time. Carried him in a sling, he wouldn't go in the buggy, he wouldn't go in the car seat. It was just one of those really difficult children. And I had three older ones to deal with as well. I found that really, really hard. So the actual feeding side of it itself was okay, because obviously I sort of knew what I was doing by then as well. Though I had the opposite from a lot of people, where I had so much milk. It was unbelievable. I could have fed the entire street. And actually that causes quite a lot of problems, because my baby would feed for about 2 minutes, which sounds fantastic, but then wouldn't have fed to sleep. So I had to find other ways to settle the child to go back to sleep again. So that's where the sling and dummy, I had the right interesting combination.
Yeah. But that's interesting because, yes, everyone is going to feed their baby, if they choose to feed, breastfeed, at different... I mean, my best mate, she would only use one boob on a feed and it would take her 10 minutes. My mum would say, oh, it only took me 5 minutes to feed you on one side and then you were done. For me, I was doing like 45 minutes on each side and the baby was still hungry. Mm. You were feeding your child for 2 minutes. What's that about? Is it normal?
Yeah, very normal. And this is why breastfeeding support really has to be on an individual basis. You can't just kind of read what a feed should be like. Someone asked me, how long should a feed be? I would say, how long is a piece of string? So a lot of it is to do with efficiency of the baby. So how efficient the baby is at feeding naturally. That's one thing. How fast your milk flow is. So some milk flows faster than others. Nothing really you can do about it. And so if you've got a sort of slightly less efficient baby and a milk flow that's slower, you're going to end up with a longer feed. You know, that just makes sense, doesn't it, when you think about it like that. And if you've got a really fast flow of milk and an efficient baby, you end up with a faster feed, a shorter feed. And then we have storage capacity. Very, very variable from one person to the next. It's nothing to do with what your breasts look like, what their size is, anything like that. You can't tell until you have a baby and you work it out for yourself. So you can imagine it like large Range Rover with large fuel tank, small little, you know, Nissan Micra or something, little diddy car with a small fuel tank. You have to drive from Plymouth to Edinburgh. Your Range Rover is maybe going to stop once for fuel. Your Nissan Micra is maybe going to stop two or three times. It still gets to Edinburgh. So it's not that you're not going to make full supply, but you may have to feed more often to get there.
Okay.
And you may need to use both breasts every feed if you've got a smaller storage capacity, and someone with a larger storage capacity may only need to use one. And so there are kind of these kind of set rules.
God, everyone wants the Range Rover then, don't they?
They do, but then the Range Rover, again, is what I have, which makes it sound like it's really good. But you get a baby who's fed in 2 minutes and really unsettled, full of wind because they're fire hosed.
Right.
So it's not necessarily a good thing either. Yeah. So the support that you access really needs to be individually tailored to what your circumstances are. And this is what's really, really important with anything to do with breastfeeding. So you can read all the kind of general guides, all this sort of stuff, but often you don't quite fit into it. And you're just like, that doesn't quite sound like me, or it doesn't, you know, the breasts don't look like mine. So that kind of individual care is just really, really important. And then just making a plan that's firstly short term. Because often, if someone's having to maybe top up or that kind of stuff, with sort of good support, it's you can often just do it for a short term. You can do anything for a week or two, but if you're having to, you know, do breastfeeding, topping up, and pumping every single feed for more than a week or two, that's just not sustainable. So, it's, you know, it's sort of getting a balance and trying to really work on it in those first few weeks, and then hopefully that will then set you up for being able to simplify things later.
Let's talk about supply being low. What would be your recommendations of how to increase supply? Because we can talk about high supply, which could lead to mastitis and blocked ducts and engorged breasts. Yeah. But let's first talk about, if your supply is low, what is the first point of call that you would recommend to increase the supply? Do I need to be taking fenugreek tablets every day like everyone's told me to?
Fenugreek is one of those weird ones that works for some people, but not everybody. And actually for some people,
oh, fabulous,
it decreases supply. So it has to be used with caution.
Oh!
I know.
Oh, okay.
So it's one of those things. It's a bit of an experiment. And it does work for some people. It's not that it doesn't work. It does work for some people. But it's not doesn't work for everybody. So the most important thing with supply is to remove the milk frequently and efficiently. They're the two things. So hopefully we've got baby who's feeding efficiently. That's what we want. And really, the most important thing is to get your baby on breast as often as you can manage it. So really, as soon as they open their eyes, when you wait until they're sort of crying, that's quite a late cue. And they're really hungry by then. And then they're a lot less tolerant of you having to have several goes of getting a good latch and all this sort of stuff.
And potentially sleepier, which means that they may not feed as efficiently.
Yeah, sometimes they go back to sleep again before you get them.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
So really trying to kind of maximise that. And then trying to offer both breasts. So often a lot of parents that I support will be only doing one breast and they'll be saying, but someone's told me I have to feed for 20 minutes to get behind milk. This is a little bit of a myth again.
Yes.
What you want to do is actually watch your baby and watch for their active feeding. So that's where they're doing the lovely deep sucks and swallows. You know, the whole jaw is moving. And then as it goes into the lighter kind of fluttery sucking towards the end of the feed, which happens, you can do some compressions, which basically means squeezing the breast and holding it for a second or two. Helps send a little bit more milk down, makes it quite easy for them to feed, and you can often get them sucking again, especially if it's been a fairly short time. But eventually you'll find that your baby's just doing this really subtle kind of fluttery suck. They sometimes wiggle and come off, or they go to sleep.
Mm.
Some babies love to hang out all day with a boob in their mouth and flutter suck all day. So if you've got one of those, if you can't get them deep sucking again, you can just take them off. So put your finger in the mouth, give it a wiggle, take them off, give them a bit of a cuddle. If they haven't had enough, they'll start waking and doing that woodpecker head nodding off of the second side. Same thing, watch for that nice active feeding again. Breast compressions massively help again. And you should find that, you know, after the second breast, hopefully your baby will be settled. Cluster feeding is a thing. A lot of babies will like to feed more than two times. And there are certain parts of the day where this is more common. So in the evenings especially, a lot of babies will cluster feed. So that's basically going from left to right, back to left, back to right, back to left for a few hours in a row.
But they never seem satisfied.
Yeah, basically. And that often happens in the evenings. Very, very common behaviour. And it's not actually to do with milk supply, really. It's because I had this massive milk supply, my baby's still cluster fed every single night. It's a normal newborn behaviour.
Right, okay.
And so sometimes it happens overnight to start within the first week or two. Babies like to feed loads overnight. And then sort of from about 2 or 3 weeks in, they quite often clustered in the evenings, you know, sort of late evening time. And that really, it sort of peaks around 6 weeks, and then it usually starts to gradually get better again, and it stops. Hopefully by about 3 months, it's usually gone completely. If you're worried about whether the frequency of feeding is normal or not, what you need to actually look at is nappy output. So okay. If you're getting good 6 wet nappies a day, and then a good 2 or 3 poos a day or more, more is fine. If you're getting less than 2 poos a day, sort of up to that sort of 4 to 6 week age, you know, the first few weeks, sometimes that's a red flag that maybe baby's not quite getting enough milk. There are some babies where it's okay, but it's always worth investigating if you're not getting regular poos, you know, so because that's usually a sign that there may be something else going on. But if you're getting lots of wet nappies and lots of dirty nappies like that, then the frequent feeding is fine. It's normal. It's really hard work and very intense, as we've already said, you know, but it is quite common what babies like to do. So if you're getting this good nappy output, and then of course you'll get your baby weighed, and as long as they're sticking roughly to their little, you know, line on the chart, that's what we're looking for. They don't need to go up. If they're quite small and they're born, they can stay small. That's absolutely fine. So we just want them to follow their line. And so that's how you kind of to know whether things are going well. We want some nice amount of active feeding, good nappy output, and then weight gain. And that's what we're looking for, basically.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Okay, let's talk about pumping with low milk supply. When would you suggest to pump? And would you suggest it? Because it can be quite demoralising, the amount that you see.
Yeah, and it's a really gruelling thing to have to do as well, that you're having to pump every feed. So the times when it's necessary to pump, I'd say, are if the baby isn't feeding very well. And so if you're finding that the baby is really sleepy, not really taking much milk, maybe sometimes they have a tongue tie, sometimes they just have difficulty latching to start with, that sort of scenario, whilst you're sort of waiting for kind of extra support with that, pumping your milk to kind of protect that milk supply is actually really important. I'm a big fan of using the baby to increase milk supply, which is basically lots of frequent feeding and things like that, because I think it's easier if the baby's feeding well, though. This is the key, so you've got to make sure your baby's feeding well to do that, because pumping is quite grueling. But yeah, in the scenario that maybe you have got a baby who's not feeding well, then trying to pump 15 minutes or so after each feed, you know, it doesn't have to be a long pumping session. Using a really good hospital grade double pump is the key, to be honest, because again, it's all about, as I was saying, frequency and efficiency. Pumps are not actually that efficient. The hospital grade ones are the best that we have. So a lot of people hire those if they're in this scenario, and you can hire them for a month. A lot of people only need them for the first month, because once their baby's sort of feeling better and things like that, they can stop the pumping. And you can use a kind of standard pump for occasional pumping, or every, you know, once a day or that kind of stuff, that works well. But if you're trying to establish milk supply with a pump, then it needs to be a really, really good high quality pump. And then because they're double pumps, you can do both breasts at the same time, which massively helps as well on the efficiency side of things. And so you would, again, try and get baby feeding off both sides. If they're having top-ups, if you've got a helper, get someone else to do the top-ups while you pump for 10, 15 minutes. And then you can use that milk to top up next time. And if you haven't quite got enough, you can add a bit of formula in as well. But the, you know, you can get your milk supply coming up to more what the baby's taking. As the baby gets better at feeding, you should be able to reduce the amount of pumping and supplementing that you're doing, as you know, after the first week or two, hopefully, and you know, if you're getting some help with it and getting baby feeding better. I do a lot of twin support, as you can imagine, being a twin mum, and twins are often born around 36 to 37 weeks gestation, and they're really sleepy, and so a lot of people have to start doing this triple feeding, which is the breastfeeding, pumping and topping up routine, and it's totally hardcore. So trying to do it for as little time as possible is basically the best way. So, yeah, and trying to get the baby's feeding, you know, really efficiently is the key.
Now, can I ask, because some people will just not get on with pumping and they won't want to do it. And I mean, for me, I get basically nothing, but I've been trying to do it to kind of increase my milk supply. And I've been trying to not pay attention to the amount. Can I ask you, because something that I discovered on the second baby was a thing called HACA, these suction caps that you put on the boob when you are feeding on one boob, and it's supposed to encourage the letdown, which the letdown is, well, what's the letdown for people that don't know what the letdown is?
Letdown is the official term is a milk ejection reflex, and it's basically once your baby suckles, there's a big surge of oxytocin, which is the love and bonding hormone, but it also, oxytocin squeezes things, so it squeezes the milk cells and lets the milk down into the main part of the breast so that the baby can take it easily, you know what I mean? So it's being produced in the background all the time, so it never stops. It's like a factory going 24 hours a day. And then every time the baby latches on, it sort of releases a load for the baby. So that's what the letdown is.
Now, HACAs, I felt like were far more effective for me with the amount of milk that I would get out, and also kind of more convenient because you just kind of stuck it on whilst you were feeding on the other boob. Now, my worry, if I haven't fed on one boob, and I'm feeding on the other, and I've got the HACA or the suction cap, lots of different brands are doing them now, and it's getting milk out, should that milk be in the feed for my baby when I get to the other boob, because I'm a double boob feeding mum, but some people won't be, or is it okay because it's kind of, there's going to be more milk that comes too? Because what I worry about is that the milk that I've caught in the cup that maybe I'm going to put into a bottle later, he should be having on that feed rather than feeding him later. What do you think about them?
There is a bit of that. It's worth having a slight concern around that. So what I normally suggest, if you're using the HACA whilst you're still establishing your supply, so this is sort of in the first 6 weeks or so, you have to be a little bit cautious. Sometimes it can cause a massive oversupply, because if parents are using it every single feed and their baby's also feeding well and everything else is working well, you actually end up with too much milk. And then that can cause the problems we were talking about earlier about, you know, fast letdown, mastitis, engorgement, all this sort of stuff. So you have to be a little bit cautious about using it in the first few weeks if everything's going well. If things are not going well, it can be better to use a good pump, but obviously that's a lot harder to do. So, but there is a thing, if you've got a baby who's a little bit inefficient on the breast, taking the kind of easy milk away from them with the milk collection, the silicone pump, can sometimes mean that they then need a top up, if you see what I mean. So you can sometimes be taking the milk and then having to give it in another way afterwards when they could have had it from the breast. So what I normally suggest in this sort of scenario actually is using it on the second side. So you're giving your baby first breast, second breast, and then you can use the HACA on the second breast, if you know what I mean, and get whatever it will take. It might not get so much volume, but you know, in the long run, it's better for baby to take it directly if possible. Later on, some people find that their babies will sometimes have both breasts and sometimes have one breast, depending on the feed and, you know, what mood they're in, and, you know, whether they're up for a three-course meal or whether they want a cup of tea and a biscuit type feed. A lot of babies will have varying times and amounts, you know, throughout the day. So if there's a feed that your baby tends to only have one side for, then that's a really good one to use those on, you know, later on. They're a useful device. They just need to be used a little bit with caution.
That's really helpful to know, because I've been like using them and I've been like, wow, I just got 30 mils without doing anything. And then he's been quite hungry in the last few days. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
The baby will likely be able to get more, because babies tend to be able to get the milk that pumps and silicone pumps and hand expressing can't get. Babies are designed to, you know, Mother Nature's millions of years of designing a baby to feed, and then we have these devices which are man-made versions trying to replicate it. Of course, they never quite work quite as well. So you would probably find that if your baby goes on, latches, you'll get another letdown of milk. So it's not that you've run out. You know, if you've taken that 30 mil and then you put the baby on the breast, you will probably get another letdown and the baby will take some more. Do you know what I mean? So it's not that there won't be anything left. But if you've got a baby who's struggling a little bit, sometimes it can be easier if they can have that nice, easy flowing milk. Bear that sort of thing in mind, I think.
So let's talk about oversupply, high supply, and what problems people may come into with having a bit of a high supply.
Yeah, so often when your milk first comes in, which is usually sort of somewhere between day 2 and 5 after birth, that's caused by the birth of the placenta. So it happens whether you breastfeed or not. It's a hormonal thing. the progesterone, which is the pregnancy hormone, actually keeps a lid on your milk production. You're making milk throughout the second and third trimesters of your pregnancy. So it's colostrum, and your body just reabsorbs it when, because you haven't got a baby to feed it to yet, you know. And then once the placenta is birthed, the progesterone levels come down, and prolactin is the milk making hormone, comes up. And so over the sort of between day 2 to 5, you usually find that people's milk are coming in at that point. Some people will come in with quite a whoosh and feel very full and hard, and other people will be much more gradual and they don't notice it. And often you have people say, my milk hasn't come in yet. But actually, if they're sort of hand express something, it's a little bit more watery, and it's, and you, yeah, no, it has. It's just coming in gradually, you know, as opposed to a big, mm-hmm. big whoosh. So again, it's very individual. But for those that do have a big whoosh, they get very hard breasts, often hot, and, you know, it can be quite hard to get the baby to latch, because sort of like, you know, it gets very swollen and its baby sort of bounces off, like a, trying to latch onto a beach ball. So we can do a little bit of sort of massage and something called reverse pressure softening, which is where you just push the areola, which is the bit around the nipple, sort of in towards the breast, and you just kind of soften the area. So that can help baby get okay. on the breast. Now, a lot of people fall into the trap of here, because they're uncomfortable, that they start pumping the extra. So the baby's taking a certain amount of milk, and then they're still feeling quite full and uncomfortable. And so if you sometimes if you start pumping at that point, that can then carry on, and you continue to make too much milk. So ideally you try and leave it, and yes, it is a bit uncomfortable, but within the 3 or 4 days you usually feel a lot better, and your milk supply is adjusted a bit more to what baby's taking. If there's an inflammation and things like that, cold compresses help with inflammation. If you're feeling really swollen, you can safely take ibuprofen, as long as you're safe to take it yourself and breastfeeding. Ibuprofen helps with as well as pain relief, helps with inflammation as well. But trying to just sort of really wake baby up and feed them as much as you can, but then try not to do extra on top of that, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So yeah, and it can just cause problems. Babies, you have a very fast flow. The baby splutters a bit, struggles to latch. They sometimes come off and on. They're very fussy. They get lots of wind. So in this scenario, we want to make sure baby's getting a really deep latch. Sometimes feeding baby in a slightly more upright position, so their hips are lower than their head, so maybe a more diagonal mm-hmm. position than what we would normally do works well. Leaning back really, really helps. In fact, leaning back really helps for pretty much every single breastfeeding scenario.
Even if you've got low supply?
Yes.
Oh.
Because babies, if they're draped across your tummy and they're lovely and close in to you, they don't slip off the breast and they feel very grounded and they tend to feed better in a slightly laid back position. So you can sit up to first latch your baby, but then slide your hips forward, lean back, and you'll probably find that your baby will be really nice and settled and actually feed quite well, you know? So it does. I'm a massive fan of laying back. Lots of stuff on YouTube all about this if you go and search for laid back position and things. And then actually trying to feed really frequently and trying to kind of just get, you know, the milk moving as much as you can. So the longer you leave milk in the breast, the faster the flow is. So trying to encourage your baby to feed frequently, and if they can, try and have both breasts. Sometimes when you've got a massive oversupply, the baby will only take one, but trying to encourage them to have both if you can helps a little bit too.
We haven't really talked about the initial cracked nipples, sore nipples. Even for a parent that's had one, there's still that strong sensation when you have a new baby on you. How can we alleviate, and how long do you expect to have those sore nipples for?
I mean, ideally you wouldn't have sore nipples. So it normally means that the latch is a little bit shallow.
Okay.
Trying to really increase the amount of breast tissue that the baby is getting is uh-huh. the key to kind of getting a comfortable feed. So one of the main mistakes, I don't like to say mistakes because it doesn't sound right, because it's not the parents' fault, you know what I mean? They're not shown how to do it. I'll say mistakes in inverted commas that people make is to start with their nipple opposite the mouth of the baby. Where in reality, in order to get a deep latch, babies have to throw their head back. So we want to make sure that we're leaving, supporting baby with sort of hand behind the shoulders, fingers and thumbs behind the ears, so that they can put their head back to latch on. It's like having a massive, either a big apple or a large burger, whichever you prefer, use that analogy. If you're trying to take a massive mouthful of that really giant burger, you have to go in from underneath and put your head back and really open your mouth wide and take a massive bite. Yeah, and so your baby has to do the same thing in order to get a deep latch. And so what happens if you start with the nipple lined up to the mouth is that when they put their head back, the nipple hits the tongue and it can't go back very far. Mm. So what we actually need to do is start with the nipple just under the nose on this, it's called the philtrum, that little bit where there's a groove, you know? So we start with the on the top lip, nipple there, tickle that top lip. That's also a rooting reflex. So it stimulates the baby's rooting reflex and it should encourage them to open their mouth. And then as long as you're not holding the back of baby's head, when they open their mouth, they should put their head back. And when they do that, the nipple will be pointing right up into the roof of the mouth. And you then bring baby on firmly. Best way of describing it, I'd say. If you're too cautious, they tend to suck it in like spaghetti instead of actually taking a wide mouth. And that's really painful when they do that. So doing that wide mouth and bringing the baby onto you. And making sure that you're in a comfortable position. So, you know, a lot of people will kind of lean over and put their breast in the baby's mouth. And then you have to stay like that, all hunched up, shoulders down, you know, back hurting, all this sort of stuff. So trying to bring baby to you is the best, you know, best way to do it if you can manage it, and getting some good support so that you're not feeling uncomfortable and that kind of thing. So yeah, getting that really good deep latch in the early days should mean that you're a lot more comfortable. So sometimes we get a little bit of initial pain when the baby first latches, maybe for about 10-15 seconds, and that can be okay. That it's not okay, it hurts, but you know, for, it can be normal, so to speak. If the rest of the feed is comfortable, that's probably an okay latch. If you're finding that it's sort of pinching and rubbing all the way through the feed, or you can feel the gums, or you can feel the sort of, you know, and it's hurting, and if your nipple comes out the mouth and it's really kind of pointed in a kind of lipstick, you know, that kind of new lipstick shape that you get, then that was probably a bit of a shallow latch. And that eventually, if you keep getting that pointy nipple, the ridge that you make cracks, and that's where the cracking happens. So trying to get that really deep latch in the first place stops a lot of the problems.
There's so much with breastfeeding. It's such a huge topic that, yeah, as you say, is so individual. But I really appreciate you touching on some of the kind of key aspects of breastfeeding and baby and latch, and just really, really appreciate your enthusiasm and help towards this minefield of a situation. And lastly, what would be your recommendation? So how long should somebody be potentially struggling with breastfeeding, and should there be a time period where there should be some kind of progress or understanding that it's either for you or it's not?
I think the most important thing is to not stop before you've actually got some help with it, because there are so many people out there who try breastfeeding and it's not working and they just stop straight away. Mm-hmm. And 99% of the things that they're struggling with are probably able to be sorted by improving the latch. That's pretty much it, generally.
Yeah,
so,
right.
You know what I mean? And sometimes that's a matter of moving the baby a millimetre, and it's that simple. And then they're pain-free and the milk's flowing and everything was working. And I always feel so sad for people that have stopped before access and support. And the problem in our country at the moment is that you have to often go out and look for support. Mm. It's not just there for you. That's what I would love to see, is that everybody gets access after birth to someone, good qualifications, who can actually sit with them for a whole feed and watch the baby feed. And this is the problem, is that our midwives are fantastic. They do an amazing job. They have a massive caseload. They cannot sit with each individual mum and actually spend the whole time talking about feeding and how to get babies latched and things like that, because they've got five other mums they're supposed to be looking after at the same time. So the way our healthcare system at the moment is not set up well for breastfeeding support. So you actually have to go out and look for it. And this is the problem. And when you're postpartum, you know, with the whole overwhelm of having a new baby, it's just so difficult to do that. So that's a really good job for your partner to go and find me some breastfeeding support, partner. Go and sort them. Yeah. That's a really good job to give somebody. And if you can afford it, pay, because to be honest, you'll get a really good service in your house. And so sometimes putting a little bit of money aside for that, or, you know, if you've got people who are worried about what to buy you after, you know, you get so many outfits, don't you, when you have a new baby. And actually far better probably use of the money would be to, you know, put it into a pot for breastfeeding support or something like that. But there is loads of free support out there as well, and the breastfeeding helplines are fantastic. So I think that's the first thing, is get some support.
Yeah.
If you're finding, even with the support, that it's struggling, I'd always give it maybe sort of, you know, see how you get on, but you know, give it a good 4 or 6 weeks really before you make any sort of firm decisions about what you're doing. Because often things get a lot, your babies just get better at being in the world after about 6 weeks, you know, they're just getting more used to being out and kind of, you know, they're not as unsettled. And definitely by about 3 months, things are usually a lot easier by then. There's a vast amount of time when you're struggling with breastfeeding, thinking about 3 months. So really, in the first few weeks, is take it a feed at a time and just do your best with it, basically.
So. Thank you so much for joining us, Catherine Stagg, and for all your information. Really, really appreciate it. Lovely to meet
you. Okay, so nice.
If you are enjoying Is It Normal, the Pregnancy Podcast, we would love to hear from you. Review it if you fancy, or you can just give it a little like or subscribe. It all really, really helps to build the community of other pregnant women that are going through this too. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope to be in your ears again very soon.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.